Welcome to the Cultural Services Historic Preservation and Tree Advisory Board meeting for Monday, June 3rd at 5:30 p.m. I would like everyone to rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can we please have a roll call?
Here.
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 Thank you. So number three is our adoption of agenda. We do have an amendment for the agenda this evening. We are going to move our new business, item 7A, in front of the old business, 6A, court reservation system. Oh, my pen died.
It did die.
Oh, it's working now. Do I hear a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
I move to approve the agenda as changed.
I second that.
All in favor for the amended agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Moving on to the approval of minutes, I have to say this was an exceptional job on the minutes from last week's very long meeting. I thought I didn't see any changes that needed to be made. Did anyone else have any comments, discussion points, or changes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
I second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, our minutes are approved from the May 6th, 2024 meeting. And then we'll go to our report of staff, our cultural services update with Mrs. Alex.
Thank you very much. So I just have a few minor reports to update. Budget preparations have been going on through the past few months, so staff appreciates board's recommendations on any future projects. They have been placed of what we've discussed, and we will know approval at council's hearing of the final millage in September of what's been passed. The volunteer workday was a very good success. We had 16 volunteers, and we removed 121 pounds of the air potatoes. So I just want to applaud everybody that showed up and really helped out, and not just for the workday, but for the past 6-7 months that have really done a great job of removing a lot of invasive species.
Was that all invasive? Like, was that air potato mostly, or was it a variety?
Yeah, so for the workday was just air potato, just because we wanted to get from the experts how to properly remove it for, you know, for the foreseeable future. They will be coming back out to kind of spray for any of the vines that are left over, and they'll be attacking Timaquan oaks on their own in the future as well. But and a few volunteers also from that training removed the remainder that was left over in the park that we couldn't get that day. So quite a bit, maybe about 90% of those air potatoes are gone from the vines in the park. And we are going to be planning for another volunteer work day, hopefully in the fall. Young Bear Environmental will be coming back again to help with another batch of volunteers. And then I do have future programs. I made a printout. I can pass. I'm sorry I didn't put them on your desk before, but I can pass those out to anybody before you leave. But we also place that out for emails as well. So that's it from Cultural Services. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions? No. Impressive amount of air potatoes. Looking forward to participating when it's cooler in the fall. Awesome. Let's move on to 5B, our public works update with Mr. Fred Griffith. Dan Scales instead again.
Good evening. I have a really brief update for y'all. Public Works has been working really hard since the last time we met, just taking care of all the summertime activities and tasks. Luckily, we haven't had a lot of rain so far. I guess that's a good thing, except my lawn looks pretty rough. So grass cutting's been kind of at a minimum, which is good. We do have some staffing challenges right now. We're actually down 3 positions. 2 folks resigned and 1 person's out on medical leave. So It's been a little challenging for Public Works to get everything done, but they're working hard to prioritize what they're doing to make sure things are getting taken care of. With that, I want to let you all know, you maybe you've heard, maybe you not have heard, that Fred Griffith, our Public Works Director, has retired, is retiring. So his last day in the office will be June 14th. He is going to go on to do hopefully not much. He has earned it. I can't begin to tell you how much I appreciate all the work that Fred's done for the town to make this community much, much better. I've had a good time working with him, and I've learned a lot from Fred. So I'm sure you all will miss Fred as well. So if you are in the area between now and the 14th, stop by and say sayonara. So with that, I'll answer any questions you may have.
Any questions?
No, I just have one comment. Thank you for filling that street fast on Beach Street the other night. I appreciate that.
And thank you for that. I just wanted to give you an update. Port Orange actually was down there, I think, Friday, also putting some material in that cut at Beach Street where they put that sewer connect in. Mm-hmm. I know Steve Dunlap's been working with Port Orange to figure out when they're going to finalize whatever they're going to do there. So we're keeping an eye on it, make sure it stays okay, and we'll make sure Port Orange takes care of that as quickly as we can.
Thank you.
Awesome. Are you guys hiring those two open positions in Public Works?
Yes. I think they have a couple applicants, okay. But I believe the position's also posted. So if you know somebody that might be interested, tell them to apply. And Steve Dunlap will be here at these meetings after tonight. So you'll get an opportunity to enjoy his company. But if y'all ever need anything, please don't hesitate to contact me. I'm at your disposal for whatever you need.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So let's move down to 7A, our new business, our tree removal request at 112 Inlet Harbor Road.
Good evening. I'm Patty Rippey, principal planner. And we are here tonight to talk about an application for request for removal of two trees at 112 Inlet Harbor Road. One of the trees is 18 inches diameter breast height, and the other is 26 inches diameter breast height. Let's see. Of course, you know any trees that are 18 inches or greater diameter at breast height require this board's approval. The review must consider all of the standards and criteria listed in our land development code. And you have the authority to approve with conditions, or deny the proposed tree removal. As mentioned, the subject property is at 112 Inlet Harbor Road. It's a vacant lot. It's in the R1 zoning district, and it was part of the Inlet Harbor Estates subdivision that was platted in 2020. The property does meet all of the requirements of the zoning district for development of a single-family home. The surrounding properties in the area are also zoned R1 for single family residential development, and the abutting lots to the north, east, and west are also vacant lots, and abutting lots to the south are already developed single family lots. And here is the image of the plat, and you can see the property highlighted in yellow, and that is fronting in the Harbor Road, of course. And here's the location on an aerial view. And then this here is an image of the blue area. The blue highlighted area is where the structure will be built. And then the yellow areas with the X's are the two trees requiring your approval. And the 26-inch tree is located towards the front of the structure, and the 18-inch tree is located within the clear zone and the rear of the structure. And here is images of the trees, the 18-inch and the 26-inch. It's a pretty heavily wooded lot. Okay. And I've just kind of already mentioned this information. The applicant did provide a narrative, and he and his contractor looked at several different options for moving the position of the structure. However, due to the setbacks required and the location of the trees and how they're situated, that even setting the home back 10 feet would still require removal of the largest tree. Okay, and then here are the standards. So the actual or intended use of the property, as mentioned, is it's the R1 zoning district, and so it's a single family residential development, and this is consistent with the zoning. The desirability of preserving these trees, of course, we would like to see them preserved. However, there is nothing that is unique or rare about these specific trees that would require them to be preserved. Number three, the extent to which the area would be subject to increased water runoff or environmental degradation due to removal of the tree. The tree will not increase water runoff. The trees will be replaced with other specimen trees. And additionally, as a new construction project, the site will be required to contain the first inch of water on site. The development will comply with the town's landscaping requirements based on the linear perimeter calculation, but due to the similar uses abutting this property, there's no need for any heavy visual screening in their buffer areas. The effect that the changes to the natural grade will have on the trees to be preserved. The preserved trees are currently at an elevation of 5.5 feet, and the overall grading of the site will drain from rear to front, and the front of the property elevation will be graded at 5.5 elevation, so those trees will not be impacted. Okay, the extent to which site design considerations, including the relocation of roads and utilities, is not applicable to this application. Oh, is that wrong? So based on the findings of the staff report, the application complies with the tree protection requirements and meets all the criteria in the section 4.10.4.D to support removal of the two live oak trees measuring 18 inches and 26 inches. Staff recommends approval subject to the following conditions. One, the removal of the trees may not commence until after all required permits for the new single family home have been issued by the Planning and Development Department. During construction, appropriate measures to prevent the destruction or damage of all protected vegetation and trees shall be consistent with the code and pursuant to the Land Use Development Code, Table 419 and Section 4.10, a total of 14 trees are required for mitigation for removal of the 18-inch and 26-inch diameter or breast height trees. Additional mitigation is required for the removal of trees under 18 inches from the footprint of the primary structure. Four, the final landscape plan and tree replacement mitigation for the property shall meet all requirements pursuant to the code. And if there is no room left for all the required trees, the applicant shall request approval to pay an amount equal to the balance of the replacement trees required per Table 4-19, multiplied by the tree replacement fee. Do we have any questions?
No, I don't.
Thank you. That was a great presentation, full of information for us. Any public comment on this property? All right, I make a motion that we approve this removal with the five recommendations from staff.
I second.
Can we have a roll call?
Yeah.
Chair Bale?
Yes.
Vice Chair Finn?
Yes.
Ms. LaVar?
Yes.
Ms. Key?
Yes.
Mr. Shea?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. All right, so now moving into our old business. Our old business, going to 6A, the additional research on the athletic court reservation system. Thank you so much for providing so much information and some options to discuss tonight. Ms. Alex.
Yes, thank you. The purpose of this report was to provide additional information on the accessibility options for the court reservation system, as requested at last month's board meeting. The focus of this topic has been to address the two separate requirements of ADA compliance that government entities must abide by. All web content provided on the town's website must meet the new level AA technical standards, and the second one, that the town must provide a reasonable modification to a public service when a request is made. The town has until April 2027 to meet the first requirement of the new technical standards, but we must provide a reasonable modification when requested at any time. Since the distribution of the first staff report, there have been 9 suggested options for the future of the town's court reservation system. I've prepared a comprehensive staff report on the details of each suggested option, including Town Attorney Holly New's legal analysis of the liability risks involved. At this time, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. New for her presentation that she's prepared to discuss the details and the town's obligation to the ADA law. Afterwards, I will conclude with staff's request of the board.
Okay. Everybody, okay. I feel like you can hear me. If you need me to speak up, just let me know. So I prepared this presentation while I find federal law fascinating. I tried to kind of make it more of an overview and kind of give a general kind of description of each thing rather than getting into the technical side of it, because I know that can be a bit much sometimes. So I guess if anybody from the board has any questions during it, you're more than welcome to interrupt me. How do I click? Oh, wrong way. Wait. Okay. Is this better? Oh, it sounds better. When I'm picking these. Do I need to point this here? Ah, okay. So just a general overview, what is the ADA? It's a civil rights law that was enacted in 1990. The point of it is to prevent discrimination against individuals who have disabilities. The specific federal law defines disabilities, but it's a pretty comprehensive definition. So, and it is, the intent is to cover aspects of everyday life in order to kind of bring down the barriers that people who have various different kinds of disability, both physical and mental, and as of recently, emotional disabilities, face every day. And so, you know, the importance of it is it promotes an equal opportunity, and it ensures that people can participate fully in society. So Title II specifically, the ADA has 5 titles. Title II applies to public entities. And so that would be local governments, state governments, and then anybody who is a branch of local and state government. And so it requires these public entities to give people an equal opportunity and cannot deny people the chance to participate. One second. So like I just said, who's responsible? All state and local governments, their branches, and then third-party contractors who are providing public services. So that would be applicable here. In this case, the reservation system would be an agent of the town. And so that's why they would be required to adhere to the new technical requirements and every other requirement that would apply to the town as far as it goes with some sort of accommodation or something like that. So they are essentially a representative of the town, so all of the requirements transfer over. And a quote from the commentary straight from the federal regulation. So what is discrimination? So broadly, it's a disparate treatment, treating someone differently outright. It's disparate impact, so it could seem like a policy facially seems like it would not target a particular class of people, but as it kind of plays out, there's a certain group that ends up being discriminated against. So an example would be requiring driver's licenses as an only form of photo ID. So if there's a particular group that may not have driver's licenses because they can't have one because they're blind or have some sort of visual impairment, then that would be a disparate impact because now they can't participate in whatever program requires you to have a driver's license specifically. And then denying a reasonable accommodation is technically discrimination. Now, you can rebut that, but it is kind of facially a discrimination claim without even doing anything more, just outright denying it. Just some examples, excluding a person because they have a disability or denying them an opportunity to participate from a public service that is not equal to that afforded others. So some requirements of Title II, equality and participation in benefits. Those with disabilities must be provided an equally effective opportunity. It doesn't have to be an equal opportunity because that's not always an available option, but it does have to have an equally effective opportunity for them to benefit from whatever the ultimate benefit is that someone is getting. So illustrations to me are always a solid way to kind of make an abstract concept more concrete. These examples are taken straight from the Department of Justice, their Title II technical requirements manual, and it was created to assist public entities with figuring out how these very broad statutes actually apply to everyday life. And so that's why the manual was created, and then there has since been a supplement, and then they're always releasing guidance to try to help state and local governments figure out how to kind of navigate this framework. So, you know, a deaf individual doesn't get an equal opportunity if they don't have access to captions or something like, or an interpreter. And the last one is kind of to show you the difference. So the first three are where someone who has a disability is not getting equally effective opportunities. And then the last one kind of shows you the boundaries of how far that goes. So a person who uses a wheelchair is trying to collect signatures. Obviously, going to private homes that may not be wheelchair accessible is very difficult, and so it's not that they would necessarily they don't have to get the signatures anymore, but they've created a parameter of, like, you have 5 months and you have other options in order to accomplish the same thing. So, like I mentioned, reasonable modifications. We've talked at length about reasonable modifications. It's difficult because what is reasonable, and that's kind of on a case-by-case basis. But the general requirement is that local governments have to make a reasonable modification of any of their policies or practices or any other regulations in order to avoid discrimination. So some people call it accommodation or modification. You can use it interchangeably in this context. And so, like I said, it's a change or an adjustment in order to give someone an equal opportunity. So as it applies here, if someone's unable to use the reservation system, we would need to and they say, hey, I can't use it, we are legally bound to finding an alternate way to giving them the same opportunity of being able to reserve a court in the same, like within the same amount of time and all that kind of stuff. So again, illustrations are always helpful. Municipal ordinance requiring a setback. You can grant them a variance. A county, this one, the second one I thought was really helpful for figuring out how to apply. So general relief program provides emergency food and shelter and cash grants to individuals who can demonstrate their eligibility. The application process is very lengthy and complex, what government process is not. And so when individuals with mental disabilities, they may be unable to complete it successfully on their own. And so they are effectively denied the benefits. So this would be that disparate impact. So it doesn't say somebody with a mental disability cannot apply for this, but as it is applied, they are unable to receive the benefits. So as a result, so the county has an obligation to make a reasonable modification so that they have access to these benefits. And so it gives some examples, but it doesn't say a county has to do this. They have to help them. They have to just give them the benefits. They have to audibly ask them because it's very much a case-by-case basis. So the integrated setting requirement is kind of tricky, but basically it's local governments have to provide services, programs, activities, and go ahead.
Excuse me, just as a reminder, if you have any public or private conversations, if you wouldn't mind just stepping outside. Go ahead.
In the most integrated setting appropriate, the translation of it is that it prohibits unjustified segregation of individuals with disabilities. Now, there is a caveat of you can do that if it's the most effective means of giving them the same opportunity, but then the caveat to that is that you can't require them to be separated. Right, so the limitations of these requirements, because it just seems like anybody could request anything at any time and any day. So if the requested action would result in a fundamental alteration of the program service or that activity that is being offered, then a local government can deny the specific requested relief almost. And or if they find that it would be an undue financial or administrative burden, those standards are relatively high. And the reason that that's important is because if someone wants to challenge a government on their denial, the burden is on the government to prove in court that it would have been a fundamental alteration or it would have been an undue financial or administrative burden. And so the onus is on the public entity, and whenever they deny a requested action, they have to put it in writing and state why, and there's all of these kind of hoops that you have to jump through and able to ensure that it the government really gave it a lot of analysis and a lot of thought and really did their due diligence in making sure that it's actually not something that they can require instead of just saying, well, this seems cumbersome, I don't want to do it. And so a fundamental alteration is a change that is so significant that it alters the essential nature of the goods or services of whatever is being altered, offered. And so a example of that would be someone who can't play beach volleyball, I think was one of the examples that the DOJ gives. There's a beach volleyball sand court. Somebody can't play beach volleyball for whatever reason. They can only play indoor volleyball, and so they request a reasonable modification to, can we please move this beach indoor and create some indoor opportunities to play indoor volleyball? The government can do that, but they're not going to be required to because that's not reasonable. The fundamental nature of the game is beach volleyball. So, but again, it's very much on a case-by-case basis. It's very much dependent on the specific resources of the government. That's really important because one government might have the capacity to accommodate somebody in a particular way, and another government may not. And so what works for one is not going to work for the other. And that's specifically why the DOJ doesn't say you have to do this, because they recognize that this is a one-size-kind-of-fits-all requirement, but it shouldn't be that way for how you implement that requirement. So as far as enforcement of Title II, there are two basic options. So the first one being that an individual can file a complaint. I think there are eight agencies that are listed in the federal regulation. You can file it with the Department of Justice, the DOT. I think there's agriculture agency. It's whatever tickles your fancy, I guess. The agency will investigate. And if they find that a violation is found, they will negotiate a settlement with the public entity to remedy the violations. It's not always a monetary settlement. It can be just fixing whatever they were doing, but it's very dependent on a lot of factors, as is everything in law. But it's if the entity was aware that they were violating, if there was some sort of intentional violation and they just chose not to fix it, or you know how extreme the person who filed the complaint was harmed by it. And so there's a lot of analysis that goes into what the final negotiation settlement is. But in my review, it's even if there's not an outright monetary damage that's being paid, a lot of the remediation requirements cost money because they look at everything that the government has, not just what the violation that's being alleged. And they're like, okay, well, you did violate this, but you also don't do this or this or this or this. And then you have to go back and remediate all of that. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a fun process from what I gather. And it can be costly depending. Right, so the second option is a private suit. And so an individual can bring suit in court. Remedies include injunctive relief and, in some cases, compensatory damages for any injuries suffered. And I just included compensation when appropriate for any emotional distress, because it's not always the case that someone can allege emotional distress versus some sort of physical harm. So I thought that was interesting, and I didn't expect. Injunctive relief being just you have to stop whatever it is that you're doing that's violating the particular law. But again, the prevailing party can recover attorney's fees, litigation expenses, all that kind of stuff. So again, even if you're not paying compensatory damages, it still can be quite costly. And so litigation is never fun for the defendant. And so that's just something to bear in mind for not just this discussion tonight, but every discussion moving forward. So I didn't touch on the specific, the technical standards, because I wanted to keep that analysis separate. So we're not talking about the requirement of the website to comply with a particular WGA level 2A, none of that, just leave your mind. We're just going to be talking about the liability as far as
reservations.
As far as whose job it would be to kind of work with someone who's requesting an accommodation. So the second suggestion would be that the resident group manages the court reservation system, and that's totally fine. But as I stated in prior slides, that doesn't change a single thing in the analysis, because the reservation group would be acting as an agent of the town. So everything that the town has to do now, they would have to do. Everything that the current entity that runs the reservation system is required to, you're just transferring the requirements, really. You're just kind of kicking the ball down the road. And something to bear in mind, although, you know, this is a very passionate group, and I love that, and so they might be really read up on all the requirements, but if you're not in local government, it is a different standard than if you own your own business and it's a place of a public accommodation, because they have to require or accommodate ADA as well. So the standards are different. And so I just bring that to the attention of everybody of like, well, I own a business and we have to adhere to the requirements of Title III. Those are different standards. So we would have to educate anybody who would be taking over.
Okay, that was my question about this option. Would there be like a little hand-holding or, you know, education through that process? Okay, that was my one question on that one.
My question is, if I had my private one or on property that is not town property, then I don't have to follow any of that?
If you have your private...
One. Pickleball court, for example.
I mean, like a private community, like
right, yeah.
Like, so, let's say Harbor Village. They have their own tennis courts. If they built their own,
right. So
they don't have to follow.
As long as they're not using the town's reservation system.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
So yes, ma'am, that would be correct. And then I won't jump into the analysis whether it would be a Title III and it's a public account. You know, that's a whole different thing.
Right.
But yes, that would be. Generally correct is that if it's a private court, like a private clubhouse, and it's kind of a members only kind of deal,
right,
then those these requirements would not apply.
Okay.
Can you go back to option one? I missed that screen.
So I should have said this in the beginning. Not every option, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because some of them were redundant as far as like C option 3, C option, but I can verbally go over.
What was your option?
So option one was...
It's just to remove the court system altogether, basically, right?
Yes.
Reservation.
Yeah, sorry. So the analysis for that is, as it stands to remove it, you know, you have open play. Everybody is getting the same opportunity, whether or not they have a disability or not, to use the pickleball courts, which is a public amenity. So there's nothing that has been brought to my attention that would cause any sort of issue with ADA, as long as the...
Well, we're going to get to public discussion in a minute. We'll have to finish this presentation first.
Right. And so as I'm assuming, because this was used built under a federal grant, that it requires to meet physical requirements under the ADA. So there's not going to be an issue of... anyone who has a disability saying, I'm not getting the same opportunity as everybody else to play. It's market competition at that point.
Right, right.
Okay, and so number two, the town would still be responsible for making sure they comply. And I want to note that To your question of can we educate them, absolutely. But if there is a violation down the road, not just with a residential group managing it, but anybody who's managing it, if they violate the ADA, that's on the town. Because, you know right. So it wouldn't be, well, we...
Right.
Yeah, okay. I just want to... Mm-hmm. So I would implore the town to make sure that there's some sort of...
agreement.
Well, not even, because it's like, that's just kind of saying we're acknowledging that we're not transferring liability, but we're transferring responsibility, but we retain liability.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I want to reiterate is that to just say this contractor is using or is facilitating a public service, that's not wiping your hand of it, even if you educate them.
Sure.
Like wanting to make sure that we there's some sort of overview to just make sure like there's an ongoing, and that's for any public service, really. So the third suggestion, to classify certain pickleball courts for open play. And so this is really a solution that doesn't address the underlying problem, and I think that it's a bit convoluted, and that's why I'm trying to separate the analysis. So the problem is that a person with a disability is unable to access the website that provides reservation systems for athletic courts. They can't access the reservation system, not they can't access the courts. If the reservation systems are booked, then yes, but we need to give them the opportunity to use the reservation system and reserve a court. So I just go over the law, the regulations prohibit any quality and services. Public entities may not, quote, afford a qualified individual with a disability an opportunity to participate in or benefit from the service that is not equal to that afforded others, or, quote, provide a qualified individual with a disability with a service that is not as effective in affording equal opportunity to obtain the same result. So as applied, in this case, the benefit, like I said, is not the use of the athletic courts. It's the opportunity to reserve a particular court on a particular day at a particular time, like anybody who doesn't have a disability has the opportunity, notwithstanding the fact that they may be booked. But again, we're trying to achieve kind of a fair market kind of situation. So the solution... note that the ADA provides for equality of opportunity, not equality of results. I know that that was some discussion at the last meeting. And so a solution is one that provides a person with a disability an equal opportunity to reserve an athletic court, as is afforded those without a disability. So that's what we're trying to achieve here. Mm-hmm. Failure to provide an alternative method of access may be an independent basis for liability under Title II, and that's what I was saying before, is outright denying someone gives someone grounds to either file a complaint or file a lawsuit. Again, we can rebut that, but why even get that far if we don't have to? So for the fourth suggestion, going off the my original analysis, I said see answer three, as far as classifying a tennis court as open play is kind of the same thing. We're not giving them an opportunity to use the reservation system for the pickleball court. So, and then blocking off hours for open play, either on the tennis court or select pickleball courts. Again, someone with a disability still can't reserve a court. That's the issue. And then number six, switch the town's online court reservation system to a different vendor that states that they are ADA compliant. That would be great. That would knock out the technical standards, but we're not in the analysis, we're in an accommodation analysis. So they can be they can be technically adhering to the web content accessibility guidelines, but they still have to provide an accommodation to someone. So that's like always a requirement.
Yeah. I have a question. Because I talked to some different court reservation systems, and they are working. They know about the new rule, whatever, and they're working on it, and they will contact me when they have it.
That's good.
Yeah, yes. So I'm thinking that would be great. One even sent me pricing, which was reasonable.
Yeah, because
so they are working on it.
If we need to, if the consensus is to keep it, that's fine. But we would have to be compliant by that April 26th.
Yeah, that's why they're giving. It's hard to do. That's why they're giving him that.
Did you ask them what they do if someone needs an accommodation?
I've called some different cities. And they have, like, I have to bring it up here. The city of Pittsburgh has I talked to an expert from the ADA, and she said this would be acceptable. Let me just get the, I have to find it.
Well, okay. I guess we can get to that.
But, okay.
But they also, they would be able to give a reasonable comment. Like, they have some sort of method.
Well, I could read.
That's fine.
Or we can wait.
It doesn't really matter.
But also, I mean, we have an ADA
coordinator.
Can't they look at Hold My Court, what we use now, and tell us what it's lacking? And I had gotten in touch with the developer of Hold My Court, and he is willing to make accommodation, you know, change some things on there, too. But if we don't know what it's missing, how can he make those changes? And I sent him all the ADA, because the ADA sent me a dumbified one.
Right. So, I'm going to create a scenario.
Sure.
So, I have a physical disability that keeps me from using the reservation court, or the reservation system, even though the system is ADA under the technical standards. You remediate the web content, so it has the contrast and it has the tags and it reads all that, but I still can't use it because of my particular physical disability. What do I do?
Well, you would contact the ADA coordinator of our town and tell them what it's lacking. And then we would contact the developer of the site and see if they could fix that for them. There's also, on most computers, they have accessibility things. We were playing with it. Makes them bigger and contrast, grayscale, smaller, all these things that help them. And also, you know, a lot of these people already have things like screen readers and everything. Because,
right. But what if it's a disability that is not...
Like what?
Someone who has Parkinson's, for example.
Well, we have some people like that, and they can do it.
Someone that doesn't have a computer or access.
That's true.
That
wouldn't be a disability, but I understand what your point is. Right. Yeah. So, but that's what we're addressing here is those instances, because the definition of a disability is always changing under the ADA. It's always expanding. Like I said, they just recently have started introducing anxiety disorders and mood disorders into into what qualifies as a disability. And so what we're trying to identify is a weakness of if it can't be remediated through the technical standards.
And it says reasonable, so sometimes it can't be. But I talked to Volusia County's ADA coordinator, and she says with their reservation system, I think it's more for picnic things or whatever it is. It's a reservation system. And she said they use court reserve, so I don't know. But she keeps giving them. She said, I just sent them a list of 20 things they need to fix. and they're a small company, and they don't have a big IT department, so it's going to take some time. But she's working on it. We have an ADA coordinator that should be doing the same thing.
Right.
Instead of just saying, nope, we're not going to do it because we might get sued.
Right. So does she say what they do for someone who can't access those services while they're waiting for the company to remediate?
Well, like the city of Pittsburgh has a website accessibility statement. The city of Pittsburgh is committed to ensuring the accessibility of our website for all people, regardless of their ability. The city does not discriminate against individuals with disabilities on the basis of disability in its services, programs, or activities. If you are experiencing an accessibility barrier and you would like to request an accommodation, please contact the city ADA coordinator, and it has her name. Click here for the full website accessibility notice, and click here for the City of Pittsburgh accessibility statement. They do it. There's a town in Connecticut I talked to that does it. And I asked the expert from the ADA if that was acceptable, and she said, yes, it was.
If putting a statement,
like before they go on to hold my court, if, for example, when they're, you know how we have it, you're leaving the town of Ponce Inlet, you're now going to this site.
Right.
You could have that on our town page.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure for our current reservation system we have that. But again, that doesn't negate the requirement to accommodate them. So if they still can't use the system,
well,
even about saying we accommodate people who have disabilities, if someone with a disability asks for an accommodation, that's where we're standing, is what do we do?
Excuse me. Again, if you want to have a private conversation, if you could just stand outside to have it, please. Thank you.
Okay, under the ADA, doesn't it also...
Mr. Schaefer, would you talk into your microphone?
Talking to the mic.
Doesn't it also indicate that if you have a disability that you don't have a computer or anything else, you can actually get a person to register for the courts?
Yes.
Well, I think that goes into like an option 8 or 7.
Allow that.
I'm sorry?
As long as we allow that.
Right. But again, so if I have a disability to where I can't use the website and it can't be remediated to accommodate me specifically, I still want to be able to use to reserve my court so that I know when I should show up and play with my friends, et cetera. Right? So if I have to wait until I find someone, my partner or my parent or my sister or my roommate or whoever, until they get home to make a reservation for me. And so it's not my analysis that's saying that's not fair. It's the DOJ. And that's why I included a lot of their specific language on here, because they're saying that's not an equal opportunity. I can go on my phone and do a reservation in 2 minutes. But to have to rely on another person in order to accomplish the same thing is not an equal opportunity.
Well, if you go into a restaurant and you're not able to feed yourself, you're allowed to take an individual in there that will feed you.
Right.
So thereby, you're relying on that individual the same way.
Yeah.
So the person that you're relying on is held up in traffic. Wouldn't that be the same circumstance?
Yes, but it's about providing someone the opportunity to do it on an independent basis.
But not everybody can do it on an independent basis. Certain disabilities need other people to help them. That's what I'm saying.
Right. But you mean if we use the system we're using now?
So,
but we're providing a government service.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like a kind of different category.
I'm confused what you're proposing.
We, you know, the town itself isn't denying a person, a disabled person, somebody else to make a phone call or make a reservation. If we would deny that, then we would be in violation of the code.
Right. So I'm telling you based on my research, my reading, my case law, all of that, and I can definitively tell you that one of the key principles of the ADA is a person who has a disability having the opportunity to utilize a public service on an independent basis if they can.
If they can.
If they can.
Right. So So if they have, if someone doesn't have hands, then I can understand.
Well, they have mouth things they can use, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, and so, but that's the underlying spirit of the ADA. And I'm not shooting it down saying don't do that. I'm saying I know of cases where they have said that that's insufficient, and so it expands the scope of liability. That's all I'm saying.
Can you give us an example of one of those cases?
I could find one.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to know how it relates to us.
Yeah.
What you're saying is basically just like any other government regulation, it has to be tested.
What do you mean?
It has to be tested. Basically, any regulation, you can say, okay, I disagree with that regulation in the ADA. And if you prove that you're, you know, that's what I'm saying. They have these information as far as what you need for accessibility on a website. But here again, what you're saying that doesn't matter if a person doesn't have the ability to use a computer.
Right.
It's not
so
a perfect world.
Darn if you do and darn if you don't.
It seems to me that the problem is there is no such thing as 100% liability-free solution.
Yeah, that was
solution. I think what we need to think about is, do you have a sense of what is the least liability for a government agency?
That's what this analysis was.
Yeah.
This is
supposed to be
exactly
provided.
That's
what she
was.
Did.
And that's why I'm sitting here saying I took all of these suggestions and I went through the gamut of cases, not just in Florida, but all over, because if there wasn't a case like it in Florida, I found cases on both sides of the fence, to be fair, for a lot of these suggestions. However, you know, if it were my company, I'm not sure how comfortable I would be. It would depend on my personal risk tolerance. I don't know the town's risk tolerance for litigation. That's something that the town has to assess internally. But I'm telling you, like, if I addressed the suggestions in this memo, it's because I did extensive research and I found cases that said you're vulnerable to liability. And I want you to be aware of that before you make any decision moving forward. Because I could very easily say, a call center seems great. I think you should move forward with that. And you may decide to move forward with that. But just so you know, the DOJ has explicitly said a call center is insufficient. And so for having someone assist you, that may work for someone who may not be able to use that. They may say, okay, you're right. I'll just wait until my partner, whoever gets home. And that may satisfy someone. But if someone feels like they're not getting the same opportunity because they have to wait until that person comes home at a particular time, and so they just missed out on the pickleball court that they wanted at the time, they could turn around and file a complaint or file suit. And there's not a lot of case law, but there's case law out there and there's commentary from the DOJ saying the spirit of the ADA is to have someone do something independently. Yeah, I can think of two cases off the top of my head where they shouldn't have to rely on another person. It be contingent on another person being in someone's life. And so that's all I'm saying. I'm not just shooting it down for the fun of it. I don't want to do that.
Well, and I want to bring perspective to our board as well, because we're a volunteer advisory board, right? And today we're going to talk together and listen to our stakeholders and come up with some sort of agreement to send to town council, who I think is really the one who is really going to be the best to assess the comfortability of risk. And so for us as an advisory board, I think it's just us to be open to all of these ideas. We have the benefits. We have, you know, some of the drawbacks. We have people here that would like to give their 2 cents probably, and then we'll make a recommendation to council to really take on that. You know, I think maybe above our pay grade. Is that fair to say? But I just wanted to put that in perspective. We're not going to be deciding the final,
right,
you know, decision here. We're really just pushing it to council as our decision, as our, you know, public and from us.
And I also want to just say that I really appreciate